Okay, well, I want y'all to know that I am way out of my element this morning. So I'm picturing you all right now as third graders. So if somebody will ask if they can go to the restroom or if you'll come up here and sharpen a pencil, walk around, whatever you want to do, I'll be much more comfortable. I want to begin this morning by just basically telling you my story. I was born in Houston 6 months before my dad graduated from orthodontic school. We moved to Lake Jackson, south of Houston, and I spent my childhood, my teenage years there. During the next few years, my brothers Phil and Jeff were born. I was very blessed growing up. My parents raised us in church. We were expected to be there every week. You didn't go to church. You didn't go out and play that afternoon. If you were too sick for church, you were too sick to play. I spent my childhood taking piano lessons, dance lessons, Girl Scouts, softball, and band. My parents somehow managed to get all three of us to lessons, practices, and games. I don't ever remember playing a game where my parents weren't there at least part of the time. They might be juggling three games, but they always made it to all of them. I was very fortunate. My mom was a stay-at-home mom and was always there when I got home from school. I guess you could say I was raised by June Cleaver. The house was always clean. The meals were always ready. Very much unlike my house today. My dad was an orthodontist, so that made it really hard on me. You see, all my friends went to him, so if I ever did anything wrong, he knew before I ever got home. Also, they would make things up and tell him at the office, and when I got home, I had to try to explain myself. And he usually believed me, but not always. I graduated from Brazoswood High School, and that fall went off to Baylor University. It was during my sophomore year there that I met the man I would marry. I went to a choir party at First Baptist Waco, went home that night and told my roommate I met my husband, and he didn't even remember me being there. It wasn't long until good friends and the Lord brought us together. We dated 3.5 years and were married in August of 1988. Our wedding was on the day John was supposed to graduate from Baylor. You see, he crammed 4 years into five. And we started Southwestern Seminary a week later. I taught school in Blum and then in Cleburne while John went to school full time. We were poorer than poor, but those were some wonderful days. We would save our money, and on Friday night, we'd go to El Phoenix to eat dinner at Ridgemar Mall. After that, we'd walk around the mall playing the game, "If I had money, I would buy this or that." We even went into card stores and exchanged cards by reading them to each other, but putting them back on the shelf. As I said, we were poorer than poor, but we didn't know any better. The Lord met every need we had, and we loved being newlyweds. During this time, we attended First Baptist Church of Burleson, where John was an intern for Brother Mike Milburn. What an incredible opportunity. John learned so much from Mike, and we grew to love Mike, his family, and that church. In August of 1991, John graduated from Southwestern, and we began the process of searching for God's plan in our lives and our ministry. We met with search committees, prayed, and asked God to show us exactly where he wanted us to be. After a time, he led us to Copperell, Texas. We had no idea what we were in for, but we knew that was where God wanted us. Copperell was a very small town with a post office, a school, and a little convenience store. That was it. If you blinked as you drove through town, you would miss it. We moved into a parsonage in August. It was 110 degrees outside, so of course, I was wearing shorts when we moved in. Little did we know that John would receive a phone call Monday morning at the office from the lady across the street telling him it was not appropriate for a pastor's wife to be in shorts. Oh my, what was I getting into? That same Monday, our next door neighbor's son ran over to John's office to tell him his mom was in their hen house and needed help. Confused, John walked next door to find a huge snake in the hen house. Seminary definitely did not prepare us for many of the challenges we faced in a small town. However, he was able to help her kill a snake. And this is a little dangerous, but I just had a story pop in my head that's not even here, so I'm going to give you this one for free. I used to get up in the mornings and walk. And one morning I was walking, and there was a man in town known as Hippie Johnny. And Hippie Johnny was one of the toughest men I'd ever met. He was very rough. He had answered his door one day to a gunshot and had taken a jacket and tied his insides together to get himself to the hospital. That's the kind of man we were talking about. Well, I was out walking, and I knew he had a bathtub in his backyard, but I thought maybe it was like to give animals water or something. So as I walk by, I hear, "Miss Lisa!" And I look over, and he's in the bathtub. And so as I'm telling John the story, he said, "So did you come on home?" And I said, "No, I went around again." He said, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "I just had to see if he was taking a bath or what he was doing." Well, second time I went around, he was on the side of the tub with a washcloth, and I went home. Anyway, we learned many lessons in Copperill about small church, country living, and how to depend on God. However, the next chapter of our lives was about to begin, and we had no idea what we were in for. The first year we were in Copperill, I continued to teach at Cleburne Junior High and drove back and forth to Copperill. It was during the second year of our ministry that we realized we were having problems starting a family. You see, I knew I had polycystic ovary disease, but never thought it would be a big problem. After years of trying to have a child, it didn't happen. My doctor in Waco sent us to Scott and White in Temple. We realized very quickly that the expense of treatment was going to be very great. We also realized that for me to be able to take time for all the necessary appointments, I would have to quit my job. Talk about a roller coaster of emotions. We prayed and prayed and took a leap of faith that this was what God was leading us to do. Just let me say that the struggle with infertility is probably the hardest thing I've ever been through. This experience will always be part of me, and I will always have a heart for couples who so desperately want a child, and it just doesn't seem to happen. At least not easily. The roller coaster of all the doctor visits, huge expense, not to mention the pain of shots, having blood taken, were overwhelming. Sometimes the visits were good and promising. Sometimes they were the ultimate in disappointment. All the while struggling with telling God that I wasn't asking for a big house, a Cadillac, or expensive clothes. Just wanted a child. After all, didn't people always say that children are a gift from the Lord? If that was the case, why did he choose me not to receive that gift? We continued the process and went from one heartache and disappointment to the next. I remember one instance. I remember one instance where a nurse called from Scott and White to tell me that my pregnancy test was negative once again. I remember just laying on the floor of the parsonage, bawling my eyes out. Poor John was disappointed too, but he didn't quite know how to handle it. You see, for most of my life, things had gone really well for me. I grew up in a wonderful home, had lots of friends. I was the drum major, made good grades, got the college of my choice, met the man of my dreams. For the first time in my life, things were completely out of my control. I was trying everything possible, and there wasn't anything I could do to fix it. I became more and more bitter. I questioned God, if he even existed, and if he did, why didn't he even care about what we were going through? Hadn't we dedicated our lives to serving him wherever he wanted? The least he could do was give us a child. We continued the weekly, sometimes daily trips to Scott and White, only to be disappointed time after time. When you deal with infertility, it's not something that it's easy to talk about to others. Seems like every time you go out to eat, you're put at a table next to a small child. It's very difficult to go to baby showers, swallow the lump in your throat the entire time. It's so hard to look happy for the mom-to-be when you so desperately want a child of your own. I was really struggling with my faith and trust in the Lord. I played the piano at that time for the church in Copperill. The week before Mother's Day, I told John I was not going to church on Mother's Day. With a somewhat stunned look on his face, he listened, and I explained to him that I didn't want to go to church another Mother's Day without being a mom. I told him I simply couldn't go and sit there Well, all those mothers got up and got their stupid gifts. And that's what I said. He was so sweet and understanding, and I did exactly that. I sat in the parsonage right next door to the church all alone, crying out to God and asking for a child. We continued the many trips to Scott and White, and during this time began to search for God's will and where he would have us serve. You see, we discovered very quickly that we were not country people. John was burning out quickly, and we needed a change. He got his resume out, and we began seeking God's will for a move. Mike Milburn, his pastor at First Baptist Burleson, contacted John and told him about an opening in West. Mike was out of town at the time and told us not to make a decision until he contacted West. He contacted them and told them not to make any decisions until he could get John's resume to them. That happened, and they came to hear John preach in December. We went with them to lunch and had a wonderful meeting, and we felt like God was calling us to West. However, the process took much longer than we thought. God was at work, but his timing was not ours. We continued to make the trips to Scott and White. The first year I didn't work, we spent more money on our Scott and White bills than John made. How did we do that? I can't tell you on paper, but I know that God was taking care of us and teaching us that if we trust him, he can still do miracles. During the next 7 to 8 months, John heard from West periodically that they were still interested in him, but moving slowly. To make a long story short, we were finally asked to come in view of a call in September of 1994. We came to West and fell in love with the community, the committee, and the church. John preached Sunday morning and Sunday night, and the church voted to call us. We were so excited. We began immediately to make plans to move to West. That very next day, I got a call from Scott and White telling me that I needed to go to a clinic in Waco on Tuesday to have a pregnancy test done. I didn't want to. You see, when you've had 20 to 30 of those done, you know what the result's going to be, and you would really rather not go and subject yourself to that rejection anymore. But we drove to Waco, they drew blood, and as we left, I asked when they would call. I was already expecting the, "I'm sorry, your results are negative, so you need to make an appointment in Temple." However, they said if we would come back in an hour, they would have the results. I wanted to opt for the phone call, so I didn't have to face anyone when I got the bad news, but John talked me to going back for an hour. We ate dinner and then we walked around Target for what seemed like an eternity. When we went back into the clinic, the nurse met us with what seemed to me like a regular, "I'm so sorry" smile. However, the words that came out of her mouth had nothing to do with being sorry. "Congratulations," she said, "you're pregnant." After I picked myself up off the floor, I quickly asked if she was sure. Is there any way she could have my results mixed up with someone else's? "No," she said, "it's definitely a positive." I have no idea how we got back to Copperell that night. I think we just floated home. After 5 years of struggling with infertility, God had finally answered our prayers. We saw our Temple doctor a few days later, and he confirmed the results. We were so excited. I had a few problems early on, so the doctor said that I was not to do any lifting. Well, we were getting ready to move to West. My parents came and helped us get things packed up and moved. For us, Ashley was the ultimate confirmation that we were exactly where God wanted us to be. You see, during the next year here, there were 9 babies born at this church. I'm not sure how well I would have handled that had we not been having one of our own. We had prayed so long for Ashley and decided the best decision for us would be for me to stay at home with Ash instead of going back to teaching. Those first few years were not easy financially. Again, God provided. We were so blessed to be able to live in a nice parsonage next door. I also taught piano lessons in the afternoons to help make ends meet. We were so blessed during this time to be in West. John was loving his job, and we were loving being a family. We were blessed to see church growth. About 4 years later, we decided to try to have another child. We first saw my doctor in Waco, and he immediately sent us back to Temple. We began the agonizing blood tests, doctor visits, shots, and drugs all over again. This time the roller coaster was even harder because we had a small child to take care of. When Ashley was in kindergarten, I had just finished a round of fertility shots and began to have unbearable pain on my right side. We took Ashley to a friend's house and John took me to the ER. After 7 hours of waiting, we were finally seen. After the first round of tests, they came in and told me I was pregnant. I told them I really didn't think so, so they called my doctor in Temple. He told them that the high-powered drugs I was on could cause a false positive. Because of not being sure, they were unable to do an x-ray of my appendix. Since I had all the symptoms of an appendicitis, they scheduled me for surgery. They opened me up and found that my appendix was fine, but because of all the drugs, I had a very large cyst on my ovary that had ruptured. They left me on the table, called my OBGYN, and he came and finished the surgery of stitching up my ovary. Time passed, my body healed, and then we faced the decision of what do we do next? Do we give up on the desire to have a second child, or do we go back to the drugs that had just caused this major problem? After many agonizing days and weeks of praying, talking, and seeking God's will, we decided my body just couldn't take any more of the side effects of the drugs, and I could no longer emotionally deal with infertility. That was a very difficult decision. However, I prayed many times that God would show us exactly what He wanted. During this time, Ashley was now in school, so I started subbing. That way I could help make ends meet, but could also be off for doctor's appointments if we decided to continue with the infertility treatments. I was subbing a lot and really enjoying it. The first time I subbed in one of Ashley's classes, she raised her hand and said, Miss Mommy? She didn't know what else to call me. Well, she still had some friends, even up until last year when she graduated, that would call me Miss Mommy. The principal came to me one day and said, Lisa, it's really kind of silly for you to be down here almost every day for sub pay when you have a certificate. I have a third grade job opening for next year. Would you be interested? Part of me was really excited, but part of me also knew if I took a full-time job, my hopes of having another child would end. I could no longer have the freedom to make trips to Temple for doctor's appointments as needed. But deep down, I also knew that my body just couldn't take any more. During the next few weeks, God began to give me the peace with the fact that I needed to go back to teaching and that His plan was for Ash to be it. I knew that I'd been blessed beyond measure with her, but still had that overwhelming desire to have more children. I ended the appointments in Temple, took the job at West Elementary, and very quickly realized that God was blessing me with many children. I know they aren't technically mine, but yet they are. The beauty of these kids is that I get to give them back in May and get a whole new crew in August. God has blessed me so many ways through my job at West Elementary. Infertility will always be part of who I am. I'll always wonder why it seems that people who don't really even like kids can have several, and why people who so desperately want them aren't able to. I still feel a bit of sadness every Mother's Day and Father's Day when I think of the couples who have to endure Mother's Day and Father's Day sermons with the gifts. For most people, they never think a thing about it. For me, I'm always worried about those sitting in the sanctuary with a huge lump in their throats, trying so hard not to cry. Please know that I pray for you. God has given me so many opportunities to meet with ladies who are going through the infertility process. For some, I've been able to watch their prayers answered with the birth of a child. For some, I've been able to watch if they've been able to adopt and start a family that way. For others, I'm still praying and still listening to the struggles that come with infertility. Ladies, just be aware of those around you. Whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day, a baby shower, there are people all around you who want so desperately to have children. We continue to be blessed by being in West. The church continued to grow. Ashley continued to grow and excel in school and sports. John and I began having discussions about our future and where God wanted us. We talked with several search committees and always felt that God wanted us to stay where we were. However, we realized that we were getting older and still living in a parsonage. We were building no equity, and we began to pray, and John talked to the deacons about our desire to move from the parsonage and to buy a home. They were incredibly supportive and understanding as always and encouraged us to make that move. We found what was the perfect house for us and God made it happen. We bought our first home on Northridge Circle and moved in, and it was like a dream come true. In June of that year, my parents came to watch Ashley play softball. Like all grandparents, they loved to come watch her play ball and dance recitals. They left Saturday morning, June the 2nd, 2007, to head back to Lake Jackson so that they could teach their Sunday school lessons the next morning. We had a wonderful visit. Ashley won her game, and we were putting the final plans on their 50th wedding anniversary celebration for them that August. When I hugged them goodbye and told them that I loved them, I had no idea that would be the last time I would see my dad alive. You see, as they topped the hill close to Cameron, a man crossed the center line and hit him head on. My dad was killed instantly, and my mom was care flighted to Scott and White and Temple. The phone call came to my home. "Is this Lisa? There's been an accident. We have your mom. Can you come?" Boy, we have no idea how quickly life can change. We made the longest trip ever to Temple, not knowing what condition my mom was in or even where my dad was. They didn't have him at the hospital. At least that was what the voice on the phone told me when I asked. When we finally got to my mom, the doctor prepared us for 5 surgeries. She had 2 broken ankles, liver and spleen lacerations, and other complications. I remember someone taking us to a room and telling us that 2 men had died instantly at the scene, and that one of them was my dad. Those were the hardest words I've ever had to hear. I'd just seen him a couple of hours before and told him that I loved him. Now he was gone. When I went back into the ER, my mom was back from some tests, and she asked me about my dad. Nobody had told her. I had to tell her that he didn't make it. The next few days were a blur, but God was at work. My mom didn't have any surgeries at all. I was so blessed to spend that time with her. Her faith was absolutely amazing and was what got her through. She was able to make an ambulance ride to Lake Jackson to be at my dad's funeral. We spent that summer caring for her and dealing with all the decisions that had to be made now that she would be alone. We couldn't have made it through that time without our friends, family, and family here at First Baptist West. They brought a bus down over 4 hours to be at the visitation, and some even came to the funeral the next day. What a blessing to watch as my mom healed and became independent. When I took her back to Scott and White for her follow-up appointment on her ankles, the doctor walked in and said, "I cannot explain this. There is no indication of a break in either ankle." My mom told him very quickly she could explain it, that she had all kinds of people praying for her, and that God had healed her ankles. He told her she must be right because there was no medical explanation for it, and she walked out of the office that day, just 6 weeks after the accident. They were expecting her to keep both boots on for a few weeks longer. We spent that summer helping her get doctor appointments, settling into living alone, and making all of those necessary adjustments. Life continued on at our regular fast pace, with John staying busy at church, announcing sporting events, Ashley being very involved in sports, school, and church, and me teaching school. We loved the life we had, our careers, home, and family. Ashley seemed to excel in everything she did, and we were enjoying her senior year. We began making college plans. Of course, in our family, John and I assumed that would be Baylor, but Ashley had other ideas. No matter what plans we talked about, her heart was at TCU. We began filling out applications, and in December, she was accepted. Now it became real. She had a great volleyball season, making it to the regional tournament in Bryan, and her mile relay team in track did well and qualified to run at the regional meet in College Station. This was real hard for Ashley. They did well there, but that was the end of her sporting events in high school. So when we left the meet that day, she was in tears and very upset and disappointed that it was over. Coach Woodard had promised them he would take them to eat at Golden Corral after the meet. That usually never happens with the track team. They just get on the bus and come back. Although Ashley was in no mood to eat, I'm so thankful that Coach Woodard made the choice to stop. Little did any of us know how much our lives would change that night. You see, the meet was on Wednesday night, April the 17th. John had messed up his knee pretty bad several weeks before, so I was driving home from College Station. He was on his phone on Facebook and said, "Gene Anderson just put on Facebook that the fertilizer plant is on fire." I never dreamed of what danger that could bring, so I suggested that he text Ashley, make sure that the coaches knew, so that they could go home a different way. Just a few minutes later, John's phone rang with a call from Larry Sparks, telling us the plant had blown up. Call after call came in, and I could tell it was bad. Larry Sparks called back another time to tell us not to even come to town. They wouldn't let us in. I knew we were safe. Ash was safe on the track bus. But I also knew that our little dog, Princess, was home alone. At that point, I didn't know if we had a house at all, if it was on fire or what. I just began praying for Princess along with the untold people who must have been hurt. And yes, I prayed for my dog. I believe that God cares about every part of our lives. I don't remember the drive back to West. I just knew we were getting there as fast as we could. When we got to I-35, it was like a dream. There was no other car on the highway except for emergency vehicles, driving fast with sirens and lights flashing. I just keep thinking, this is bad. This is really bad. Either that or this is a dream and I'm fixing to wake up. We kept in touch with Ashley and kept telling her we would do what we could to find Princess. We went to a friend's house to wait for the track bus, and it seemed like forever, but they finally arrived. All we knew to do at that point was to hug and cry, thanking God we were all okay. Ashley had received a text from a friend who had actually gone to our house and had Princess. We were so relieved. John took us immediately to the Johnson's house and headed back to the community center. At about midnight, they brought Princess to the house where we were staying. I'll never forget the look on Ashley's face when she got her dog back. Princess is a little white dog, but that night she was covered in soot. She smelled like smoke and she couldn't hear. Over the next few days, however, her hearing did come back. The next few days were a blur, so many emotions, heartache, unknown. It just all seemed like a bad dream and we were all going to wake up and it was going to be over. Over the next few days, we realized that we most likely didn't have a home to go back to. Over that time, God taught us a lot about needs and wants. As hard as it was to move 4 times in 4 weeks and not even have suitcases to move in, we literally moved in Walmart bags, we realized that God was bigger than all of this and that he was at work even before the explosion in West. We realized that what we had lost was just stuff. We had friends and neighbors who had lost family members who were trying to protect us and our community that night. Even before we were able to get back to our house, members of the Waxahachie Fire Department came to see John. The chaplain and the fire chief prayed with him and thanked him for all he was doing for West. They wanted to do something for us as a family, and they told John to call me from school, and they would take us to our house. I'll never forget the overwhelming emotion as we drove through the devastated community that we love so much. At that same time, it was totally amazing to see the devastation and that we didn't lose many, many more people that night. We slowly drove to that house we had grown to love and had made so many memories in. I was not prepared for the emotions I felt as I walked up to what used to be the front door of the house that I had called mine and to see it in shambles. The house that brought so much comfort was mere rubble. For me, that brought a whole new meaning to the fact that it's just stuff. And in the end, you can't take it with you. For me, that day I saw for myself that we can't put our trust in our homes, our careers, and our stuff. We must put our faith and trust in the only one who is and is to come, the Lord Jesus Christ. Over the next few weeks, we were able to move into a mobile home out from town, and we were able to salvage many of our important and personal belongings. And then we were able to sit back and watch as God met needs in some pretty amazing ways, not only for our family, but the entire town of West. When I was asked to speak to you today, I had no idea what I wanted to say. Many of you have suffered a much greater loss through this tragedy than I have. Many of you will have a much harder time during the Christmas season than I will. I want you to know that I don't take your sacrifice of your loved ones that night for me lightly. It's much appreciated by our family and our town. When you leave here today, I would like for you to take with you 2 words, the words home and the word gifts. As I thought about the Christmas season and the theme, home for Christmas, I thought about home. For many of us, it won't be in our homes as we've known them in the past. Some of us are already in our new homes, and some of us haven't gotten started yet. We've decorated our mobile home, and we've decorated a tree. It's pretty, and it was fun decorating, but it's not our house. The decorations don't quite fit where they used to, And the colors have changed to match the color of the walls in the mobile home, but that's okay. God is teaching me daily that this world is not my home, and perhaps I shouldn't get too comfortable here. Matthew 6:19-21 says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." I've come to grips with the fact that our lives changed forever the night of April 17th, and they'll never be the same. We need to focus on making home wherever we are. I'm learning that home can be in a hotel room, at a friend's house, or even in a mobile home. Home is where our families are and where we invite the Lord to be with us. As hard as it is, I've realized that it's time to make new traditions and perhaps do things a little differently than what we've done in the past. This whole tragedy has helped me to realize the importance of family, the people we spend our lives with, and not the stuff. We have learned that all that stuff can be gone in an instant. Also, with Christmas approaching, I've been thinking about gifts. We all feel the pressure of getting all the gifts purchased and wrapped. And if you're like me, you keep lists of lists during this time of year just to be sure you get it all done. One thing God is teaching me through my life, and especially through this tragedy, is that life is a gift. Not only just being alive each day, but my life is a gift to you and to others around me. I think back over my life at all the gifts people have given me, the gifts of godly parents, the gift of knowing where my dad is and that I'll see him again, the gift my mom has given me of watching her be a godly wife and mom, and of completely trusting God to get her through each day alone. The day of my dad's funeral, my mom wrote my dad a thank you note. She thanked him for being a wonderful Christian husband and father. She asked me to go in the sanctuary right before the service and put it on the pillow next to his head. That's a gift I'll always cherish and remember. Her faith is a gift she has given me. The summer after her accident, we were driving back to Lake Jackson after she had been in West with us for some doctor visits. I asked her if she wanted to see the site where the accident happened. It was still painted up from the investigation, and she had not been back there yet. She told me she wanted to stop so she could look and see where it happened. You see, she was knocked out in the accident and doesn't remember anything until she woke up in the helicopter. Anyway, I stopped on the side of the road. She was sitting in the back seat with both of her boots on so her ankles could stretch out. As we sat there looking at the painted marks on the road, I could hear her crying. She said to me, "Wow, Lisa, I sure hope that man that hit us was saved. I hope he was a Christian." Wow. That thought never crossed my mind. But that's my mom. She's given me the gift of seeing faith lived out. John has given me the gift of being married to my best friend, a man of integrity, a man who loves me unconditionally, and a man who's been called by God to pastor his people in West at this time. I have the unusual gift of watching him work behind the scenes, all the late nights, the calls to the hospitals, the weddings, the funerals, and now all the work to help West get through the relief and recovery process. Everything he does is to help others. It's a real gift to be able to live life watching him do what he does. Ashley has given me the gift of finally of being a mom. When I prayed all those years for a child, God blessed me even more than I ever dreamed possible. Infertility will always be a part of who I am, but I'm so blessed to be her mom. You see, your life is not only a gift from God to you, but a chance to live another day. But what you do with your life is a gift to others. The way we treat others, the words we use, the things we do for others are all gifts. No, we don't go out and spend money on the kind of gifts I'm talking about, but they're still gifts. What gifts are you giving to those around you? Sometimes the gifts we get are worth giving. Sometimes we have pretty gifts that are decorated with bows. We say nice things, we do nice things. And sometimes it's easier to do those for people in our work world than it is when we get home. Sometimes the gift we give at home are not as nice and as pretty as the gifts we give when other people are looking at us. Sometimes we give gifts that aren't so attractive. We're short, hateful, ugly to people we love and people we don't even know. How about the clerk in the store that gives you the wrong change? Or the worker at the fast food restaurant who gets your order wrong? Or our families who don't do what we expect them to do? Too often I know the gifts that I give look more like this. There are many afternoons, evenings after a long day at school when I come home and I'm tired and I'm short. And John will look at me and say, look, I am not a third grader. I'm sorry, I'm just in that mode, you know. But this Christmas will be unique for all of us. It's my prayer that you will make home wherever you are, you and your family and loved ones. Make it a point to concentrate more on the people than the stuff. Remember, the stuff can disappear in an instant. And make it a point to remember Christ in every part of your home and of your Christmas celebrations. Keep in mind that your life is a gift you give to others every day, not only at Christmas. As you buy and plan your gifts this year, keep a check on the kinds of gifts you're giving to those around you, every day, wherever you are. Of course, the ultimate gift was that little baby Jesus. As you go through your Christmas season in a new home, a temporary home, a repaired home, or perhaps a home where everyone is no longer present, remember Emmanuel, God with us. Merry Christmas.